This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Good morning to you all. This is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector. And today my guest is David Menashri. And we're continuing in this beginning of the new year. We're continuing our geopolitical look around the world. The previous program, we talked with David Smith of The Guardian, and we were discussing American political events. And the news is with us. We have no choice in the matter, really. We have to do a bit of focus on Iran because circumstances there are moving rapidly in many different ways. And we are delighted to be able to speak with Dr. David Menashri. I'm not going to read his full resume. It goes on quite a ways. But suffice it to say that for decades, he has been engaged in research, writing, teaching in major institutions in Israel, in the United States, and in other places. But I want to highlight one part of it, which is that just prior to the 1979 revolution in Iran, he was there for several months doing examinations of attitudes of people, I believe younger people primarily, which would have given him virtually a unique insight into what was about to happen, perhaps, and the ways it was going to happen. Curious parallel. At about the same time, I was traveling around East Java in Indonesia, trying to ascertain whether Indonesia was going to follow in the same pattern that Iran seemed to be on. He's currently professor emeritus at Tel Aviv University and is the founding director of the Alliance Center for Iranian Studies and senior research fellow at Tel Aviv University. So he spent quite a long time looking, thinking, examining, evaluating circumstances in Iran. And I want to thank you for joining us. Appreciate that. It's kind of you to give us some time. My first question, though, to you is the ongoing protests in Iran. Who's leading this and why are they leading it? And if you can also address why it's different than the events of 1979 and then the two serious protest actions that took place not so very long ago in Iran. Welcome. And can you focus on that for us, please?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me. And I think important things are happening in Iran in a very crucial time for the people of Iran and for the region. I want to begin with a more general framework of things looking at Iran. There is a tendency mainly in Israel and other places to go every 5 minutes to see what happened and what happened today and tomorrow and 5 minutes from now and yesterday and tomorrow. This is a struggle of the Iranian people to achieve the goals that their parents had in 1979, when they started with the Islamic Revolution. Iran has, it's a complex country. It's 100,000, it's oh, sorry, 100 million people, 95 million people, different political views and socio-economic situation. But I think that what is important today, what is on the table today, is what kind of Iran they want to see. What is Iran? And Iran is not, it's a country with civilization, with history. And it has more than one identity. I think that if you look at the historical way to Iran, you see that it's always a struggle between three layers of identity. One is Iranian, Persian, monarchical, national history going back from Cyrus the Great, 25 centuries, 26 centuries back. The second layer of identity is Islamic and Shiite from the 8th, 7th century, and then the 16th century Shiite Islam. And the third may surprise you, it's the Western influence and identity. When you see the young people of Iran celebrating Halloween, you understand that something happened. So they said this, death to America, death to America, but they would love to have a visa to go to the United States. And some of the children of the leaders of Iran who always attack the United States, they are in the West. They are if not in the United States, in Canada and other places. So I think that we are in a stage that is the last 50 years, where it was the era of the rise of Islam and Islamic identity. And I think that we are now moving to more Iranian, authentic Persian identity, which is loyalty to the state. If there's one thing that I already can say as a result of these protests of the last few years, is that Iran has the upper hand than Islam. This Islamic regime has done damage to the reputation of Islam. Because until now, they always said Islam is the solution, Islam is the solution. And all of the sudden you see that Islam is not the solution. So what is on the table today for the Iranians? After 47 years of Islamic rule, that was not about return to Islam, as many people think. The Islamic Revolution, like any other large important revolution in history, the two major goals. One is social justice, and the other is political justice, freedom and bread.
I'm going to interrupt just for a second so that we can pay the piper. We have to do a station identification and a commercial message. This is the imperative of radio. We have no choice, but we'll come right back in just a minute. This is Brooke Spector with the Deep Dive, and we're speaking with David Menashri, and we're talking things Iran and why it matters and what's happening and perhaps even the potential future. And we'll be right back after these messages.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is the Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and my guest, David Menashri. We're speaking all things Iran. And just before we took the break, my guest was giving us a layer cake of influences historically, politically, and I guess sociologically and intellectually as well, in a way, of what constitutes the Iran that we see now. But if I can ask you to segue from the historical to where we are now and how those different layers are interacting. And how or why did they give rise to the protests that we are watching now, even if we can only see fragmentary bits of it because of the way in which TV and the internet have been restricted? in their coverage.
As I just saying before the break, is that revolution, the revolution had two main goals. Let me make one point that, unlike what many people think, is the people of Iran in 1979, 8, 9, they went to the revolution. The aim was not to establish Islamic regime. The aim was to bring their children better life, socioeconomic reforms, and political freedom. There is no greater freedom in Iran today than used to be under the Shah, and the Shah was not a democrat. And there is no better, more welfare for the people of Iran. So the struggle that we see today in the streets is that a nation of close to 100 million people, the vast majority of them are fed up with the realities of their life. And they are on the streets, and they are suffering, and the struggle is bloody, and the regime doesn't have mercy. And so the goal is basically is to achieve the goals of 1979. When you are in reality in Iran, in which the government cannot supply water, cannot supply electricity, there are no jobs, the inflation is a level of that is unbelievable. And so people are, vast majority of them are fed up with the regime and with the policy. There are, on the other hand, people who are living from this regime, who the people who have let's take the Revolutionary Guards, the armed forces, the gendarmerie and others, and even teachers, you can't expect everyone to leave anything. They need salary, they need income. So the regime has the upper hand in many ways because they have the power, still they have the power. But what is the delicate situation today? That this domestic struggle for improving life is happening in a time that the regime is weak, not capable of supplying the needs of the people, and cannot retreat after so long. There is an Islamic regime, they don't want to give up. So do we have power between we have struggle between two powers, the people against their own country. And this happens at the time that the supreme leader is old and weak and sick, and at the time that crucial developments are in the region involving Iran and the regional countries and the United States. So all this is to get together makes the situation very complex, very dynamic. And I would suggest, and I suggested here to Israelis on any network that I have influence in, it's better for Israel, mainly for Israel, to slow down, not to interfere, not to volunteer to bring them a king or the son of the Shah or whatever. The dynamic is internal and should go on. And you think that you in South Africa understand these things better than many others.
That's an important point that you make, that you can get a government, any government really, on the outside of a rapidly evolving situation in another place, can easily make things more complex, more difficult, and worse by attempting to be engaged in the change rather than sitting back and watching the evolution of it and picking one's moment when it is crucial, rather than simply saying, aha, here's our moment, we should just dive right in. I mean, I do fear, for example, that the Trump administration is making too much of an opportunity to stir this pot without understanding the complexities, just as you have elaborated on them. If that's true, and if, as you say, that should be the modus operandi, let's inventory the way in which the various foreign relations of Iran are evolving or changing. I think the first one obviously must be Iran's relationship to whatever is left of Hamas, Hezbollah, the new regime in Syria, and perhaps the rest of the Arab world as well.
Well, it's in many ways, someone Sinwar, Hamas, by the attack on Israel on October 7, 23, destroyed the dreams of Iran. They wanted to be a superpower in the Middle East. They have proxies in the different countries. They said that they control four capitals in the Middle East: Damascus, Beirut, Yemen, Iraq, and all this was destroyed with the war. It lost, and in the 12 days war in June, when Israel attacked for 12 days and the American on the 13th day, we could see the weakness of the country. They cannot compete for being a major power in the Middle East. And the message was that they should first deal with their own problems at home. Now, we hear many things. We have, for example, we take President Trump and his policy. I don't know what is the policy. If President Trump wished,
I'm sorry for laughing. Yeah, I mean that that thought crosses my mind too sometimes.
no, that's I don't know. I'm not expert of the United States, and my land. I many years, as you mentioned, in this business of studying the region. What leaders say, it's not necessarily what they mean. It goes for the Iranians and goes for the Americans. If President Trump would have wished to break the power of Iran and win the war with Iran, he would not have stopped the Israelis on the last day of the June war from attacking Iran. And then in a certain moment he say, enough is enough, get to agreement and ceasefire. And that's the ceasefire supposedly that we have today. When he speaks today about all the signs that America is going to attack, comes in the time that Iran and United States are now speaking together about its different agreement between the two countries on the nuclear things and other regional developments. Iran cannot fight with the United States. Iran is dependent on foreign countries. Their idea that China and Russia would save them, they know that it's not going to happen. China has its own interest. Russia has its own interest. And the interest of them both is not to support Iran to survive this crisis. They have other social, economic, political goals. So the domestic crisis, one is that the government is not functioning. There is no water in Iran for the people. Drinking water they don't have. Electricity cut. Inflation. Employment and so on and so forth. People are not happy. They don't. The young people don't have future. And this struggle is somehow involved with this dramatic regional development that Iran is in the center. And I think what Iran needs today is a leadership that will decide what they want to join the people, because they cannot win the will of the people and find a way to satisfy their legitimate ambitions. The
Where
problem
do you
is
see?
that,
Sorry, go ahead. Let you finish your sentence, sir.
okay, the problem is that they don't have a leadership to do it, and on the other hand, the people in the streets are not unified, and they don't have leadership. And they don't have the military power to struggle against their revolutionary regime.
We're going to take up this question of leadership in just a minute, because I think it's a crucial one. We will take a short break, station identification, commercial messages, and then we will return on the deep dive with our conversation with David Menashri, now in Israel, but an expert on Iran, spent his life basically studying Iran and its circumstances, history, and evolution. And this is the deep dive, and we'll be right back after these messages.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Good morning to you all. This is the Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector. And today, my guest is David Menashri. And we're continuing in this beginning of the new year. We're continuing our geopolitical look around the world. The previous program, we talked with David Smith of The Guardian, we were discussing American political events. And the news is with us. We have no choice in the matter, really. We have to do a bit of focus on Iran because circumstances there are moving rapidly in many different ways. We are delighted to be able to speak with Dr. David Menashri. I'm not going to read his full resume. It goes on quite a ways, but suffice it to say that for decades, he has been engaged in research, writing, teaching in major institutions in Israel, in the United States, and in other places. But I want to highlight one part of it, which is that just prior to the 1979 revolution in Iran, he was there for several months doing examinations of attitudes of people, I believe younger people primarily, which would have given him virtually a unique insight into what was about to happen, perhaps, and the ways it was going to happen. Curious parallel. At about the same time, I was traveling around East Java in Indonesia, trying to ascertain whether Indonesia was going to follow in the same pattern that Iran seemed to be on. He's currently Professor Emeritus at Tel Aviv University, and is the founding director of the Alliance Center for Iranian Studies and senior research fellow at Tel Aviv University. So he spent quite a long time looking, thinking, examining, evaluating circumstances in Iran. And I want to thank you for joining us. Appreciate that. It's kind of you to give us some time. My first question, though, to you is, the ongoing protests in Iran, who's leading this and why are they leading it? And if you can also address why it's different than the events of 1979 and then the two serious protest actions that took place not so very long ago in Iran. Welcome, and can you focus on that for us, please?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me. And I think important things are happening in Iran in a very crucial time for the people of Iran and for the region. I want to begin with more general framework of things looking at Iran. There is a tendency, mainly in Israel and other places, to go every 5 minutes to see what happened and what happened today and tomorrow and 5 minutes from now and yesterday and tomorrow. This is a struggle for of the Iranian people to achieve the goals that their parents had in 1979 when they started with the Islamic Revolution. Iran has it's a complex country. It's 100,000 it's oh sorry 100 million people, 95 million people, different political views and socio-economic situation. But I think that what is important today, what is on the table today, is what kind of Iran they want to see. What is Iran? And Iran is not it's a country with civilization, with history, and it is one. It has more than one identity. I think that if you look at the historical way to Iran, you see that it's always a struggle between three layers of identity. One is Iranian, Persian, monarchical, national history going back from Cyrus the Great, 25 centuries, 26 centuries back. The second layer of identity is Islamic and Shiite from the 7th century and then the 16th century Shiite Islam. And the third may surprise you, is the Western influence and identity. When you see the young people of Iran celebrating Halloween, you understand that something happened. So they said this, death to America, death to America, but they would love to have a visa to go to the United States. And some of the children of the leaders of Iran who always attack Israel, United States, they are in the West. They are if not in the United States, in Canada and other places. So I think that we are in a stage that the last 50 years where it was the era of the rise of Islam and Islamic identity. And I think that we are now moving to more Iranian, authentic Persian identity, which is loyalty to the state. If there's one thing that I already can say as a result of these protests of the last few years, is that Iran has the upper hand than Islam. This Islamic regime has done damage to the reputation of Islam. Because until now, they always said Islam is the solution, Islam is the solution. And all of a sudden, you see that Islam is not the solution. So, what is on the table today for the Iranians? After 47 years of Islamic rule, that was not about return to Islam, as many people think. The Islamic Revolution, like any other large, important revolution in history, the two major goals. One is social justice, and the other is political justice, freedom and bread.
I'm going to interrupt just for a second so that we can pay the piper. We have to do a station identification and a commercial message. This is the imperative of radio. We have no choice, but we'll come right back in just a minute. This is Brooke Spector with the Deep Dive, and we're speaking with David Menashri, and we're talking things Iran and why it matters and what's happening and perhaps even the potential future. And we'll be right back after these messages.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is the Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and my guest, David Menashri. We're speaking all things Iran. And just before we took the break, my guest was giving us a layer cake of influences historically, politically, and I guess sociologically and intellectually as well, in a way, of what constitutes the Iran that we see now. But if I can ask you to segue from the historical to where we are now and how those different layers are interacting. And how or why did they give rise to the protests that we are watching now, even if we can only see fragmentary bits of it because of the way in which TV and the internet have been restricted in their coverage?
As I was just saying before the break, is that the revolution had two main goals. Let me make one point that, unlike what many people think, is the people of Iran in 1979, 8, 9, they went to the revolution. The aim was not to establish Islamic regime. The aim was to bring their children better life, socioeconomic reforms, and political freedom. There is no greater freedom in Iran today than used to be under the Shah, and the Shah was not a democrat. And there is no better, more welfare for the people of Iran. So the struggle that we see today in the streets is that a nation of close to 100 million people, the vast majority of them are fed up with the realities of their life. And they are on the streets, and they are suffering, and the struggle is bloody, and the regime doesn't have mercy. And so the goal is basically is to achieve the goals of 1979. When you are in reality in Iran, in which the government cannot supply water, cannot supply electricity, there are no jobs, the inflation is a level of that is unbelievable. And so people are, vast majority of them are fed up with the regime and with the policy. There are, on the other hand, people who are living from this regime, who the people who have let's take the Revolutionary Guards, the armed forces, the gendarmerie and others, and even teachers, you can't expect everyone to leave anything. They need salary, they need income. So the regime has the upper hand in many ways because they have the power, still they have the power. But what is the delicate situation today? That these domestic struggle for improving life is happening in a time that the regime is weak, not capable of supplying the needs of the people, and cannot retreat after so long there is an Islamic regime. They don't want to give up. So do we have power between we have struggle between two powers, the people against their own country. And this happens at the time that the supreme leader is old and weak and sick, and at the time that crucial developments are in the region involving Iran and the regional countries and the United States. So all this is together makes the situation very complex, very dynamic. And I would suggest, and I suggested here to Israelis on any network that I have influence in, you know, it's better for Israel, mainly for Israel, to slow down, not to interfere, not to volunteer to bring them a king or the son of the Shah or whatever. This the dynamic is internal and should go on. And you think that you in South Africa understand these things better than many others?
That's an important point that you make, that you can get a government, any government really, on the outside of a rapidly evolving situation in another place can easily make things more complex, more difficult, and worse by attempting to be engaged in the change rather than sitting back and watching the evolution of it and picking one's moment when it is crucial, rather than simply saying, aha, here's our moment, we should just dive right in. I mean, I do fear, for example, that the Trump administration is making too much of an opportunity to stir this pot without understanding the complexities, just as you have elaborated on them. If that's true, and if, as you say, that should be the modus operandi, let's inventory the way in which the various foreign relations of Iran are evolving or changing. I think the first one obviously must be Iran's relationship to whatever is left of Hamas, Hezbollah, the new regime in Syria, and perhaps the rest of the Arab world as well.
Well, you know, it's in many ways, you know, someone, Sinwar, Hamas, by their attack on Israel on October 7, 23, destroyed the dreams of Iran. They wanted to be a superpower in the Middle East. They have proxies in the different countries. They say that they control four capitals in the Middle East: Damascus, Beirut, Yemen, Iraq, and all this was destroyed with the war. It lost. And in the 12 days war in June, when Israel attacked for 12 days and the American on the 13th day, we could see the weakness of the country. They cannot compete for you know, being a major power in the Middle East. And the message was that they should first deal with their own problems at home. Now, we hear many things. We have, for example, we take President Trump and his policy. I don't know what is the policy. If President Trump wished.
I'm sorry for laughing. Yeah, I mean that you that crosses my mind too sometimes.
No, that's. I don't know. I'm not expert of the United States. And you know, my land, I'm many years, as you mentioned, in this business of studying the region. What leaders say, it doesn't, it's not necessarily what they mean. It goes for the Iranians and goes to the Americans. If President Trump would have wished to break the power of Iran and win the war with Iran, he would not have stopped the Israelis on the last day of the June war from attacking Iran. And then in a certain moment he say, enough is enough, get to agreement and ceasefire. And that's the ceasefire supposedly that we have today. When he speaks today about all the signs that America is going to attack, comes in the time that Iran and United States are now speaking together about its different agreement between the two countries on the nuclear things and other regional developments. Iran cannot fight with the United States. Iran is dependent on foreign countries. Their idea that China and Russia would save them, they know that it's not going to happen. China has its own interest. Russia has its own interest. And the interest of them both is not to support Iran to survive this crisis. They have other social, economic, political goals. So the domestic crisis, one is that the government is not functioning. There is no water in Iran for the people. Drinking water they don't have. Electricity cut. Inflation. Employment and so on and so forth. People are not happy. They don't. The young people don't have future. And this struggle is somehow involved with this dramatic regional development that Iran is in the center. And I think what Iran needs today is a leadership that will decide what they want to join the people, because they cannot win the will of the people and find a way to satisfy their legitimate ambitions. The problem is that,
Sorry, go ahead. Let you finish your sentence, sir.
okay, the problem is that they don't have a leadership to do it. And on the other hand, the people in the streets are not unified and they don't have leadership. And they don't have the military power to struggle against their revolutionary regime.
We're going to take up this question of leadership in just a minute, because I think it's a crucial one. We will take a short break, station identification, commercial messages, and then we will return on the deep dive with our conversation with David Menashri, now in Israel, but an expert on Iran, spent his life basically studying Iran and its circumstances, history, and evolution. And this is the deep dive, and we'll be right back after these messages.